William and the Old Man in the Fog. William wandered disconsolately about the crowded village hall, looking without much interest at the various stalls, each laden with the useless articles that are characteristic of that peculiarly English institution, the sale of work. His mother had given him sixpence to spend, and he'd bought a packet of sweets at the homemade sweet stall, which had turned out to be so burnt that even he couldn't eat them. He was just on the point of leaving in disgust when he caught sight of a screen with a notice "Fortune Teller" pinned onto it. It was tucked away in a small, unimportant-looking corner, and a small, unimportant-looking woman sat nervously at a table inside.
"Come in, my dear," she said. "It's 2 and 6 for a full reading."
"I've not got 2 and 6, he said gloomily. "I've not got anything. I only had sixpence, and that's been stole off me. Well, I call it stealing anyway. A dog couldn't have et 'em."
He handed her the paper bag.
"Try if you can."
The fortune teller nervously refused.
"I don't mind anything a bit burnt," went on William expansively, "but these don't taste of anything but burnt, not anything. I bet she made 'em of burnt. And when you think what you could get for sixpence. Sixpence! Huh. I'd like to see her eat 'em herself."
The fortune teller looked at him speculatively. The boy was garrulous and ingenuous. He might prove useful. She cast her eye round the room for possible clients.
"Who's that pretty girl over there?" she said.
William's gloom deepened.
"Her? Call her pretty. She's my sister, and a jolly rotten sister she is too. Wouldn't even give me a penny, not a penny. And she's got heaps of money. I bet she'll come along here in a minute to have her fortune told."
The fortune teller looked at Ethel again. She was quite the most attractive girl in the room. If she had her fortune told and was pleased by it, probably everybody else would follow suit. She sympathised with William over the burnt sweets and began to chat with him. William, touched by her interest, prattled volubly about his family and family affairs. By the time that Ethel had decided to have her fortune told, the fortune teller felt that she knew all about her that it was possible to know.
"Said she'd come," muttered William.
The fortune teller was naturally anxious that they shouldn't meet. "Go out at the back," she whispered to William, and pushed him out at the back of the screen where it joined the wall. It suddenly occurred to him to stop just out of sight and listen to Ethel's fortune. He listened with growing amazement.
Why, every single thing the fortune teller said was true. She even told Ethel she'd sprained her thumb last week at squash and that she'd been to a dance on Saturday. She told her that she was going away tomorrow night on a fortnight's visit to some friends in the north.
All this sounded so important and portentous that William didn't recognise it as part of his inconsequential chatter of a few moments ago and was fully as impressed as Ethel herself. William was just going to abandon his somewhat uncomfortable position when he saw that Robert had now entered. The fortune-teller began to ply Robert with artless questions, but Robert was determined to give nothing away and answered in monosyllables. The fortune-teller sighed and bent over his hand.
"Oh, there's a legacy coming to you soon," she said.
A legacy was always fairly safe.
"Yes, a legacy. I see it plainly. A legacy. Have you any relative who's likely to leave you a legacy?"
"No," said Robert.
"Oh, perhaps it's someone you've befriended. I once knew a boy who helped an old man who was lost in the fog, and the old man left him all his fortune. As for your character," she went on,
and William, who wasn't interested in Robert's character, stole softly away. But William was intensely interested in Robert's legacy. He believed in it implicitly. Robert would soon be the possessor of a vast fortune left to him by an old man whom he had once helped in a fog. William couldn't resist dropping a few hints here and there. "Wait till Robert comes into his money," he said to Miss Belfield when she deplored the unsatisfactory financial state of her Providence Club. "I bet he'll help you out." Miss Belfield gazed at him in astonishment.
"What money?" she asked.
"Oh, this legacy of his."
"What legacy?"
"This legacy this old man's leaving him."
"What old man?"
Well, explained William, I don't know as he wants people to know, but he helped this old man in a fog once, and this old man's leaving him all his money.
How does he know he is?
He told him. This old man told him.
Well, people often say that, my dear boy, and forget to make a will.
Oh, he's made his will all right, said William airily, and it's all come into Robert, every penny of it.
Miss Belfield sighed. Those are the people who go on living and living and living.
He won't, said William. He's dying now.
How do you know?
They've sent word. He can't possibly live more than a week or two now.
But they've actually told Robert that he's the heir?
Yes.
Dear me, how very interesting.
William was feeling a little uneasy.
The main fact of the legacy, of course, was true enough.
Hadn't the fortune-teller said so in so many words? But, carried away by his imagination, he had added a few details that didn't strictly conform to fact.
Don't say anything to Robert about it, he said anxiously, and perhaps you'd better not tell anyone else.
Oh, of course I won't, dear boy, said Miss Belfield.
But like William, she couldn't resist dropping a hint here and there, and by evening the whole village knew that Robert had been left an enormous fortune by an old man whom he'd once helped in a fog, that the old man was lying on the point of death, and that his lawyer had formally notified Robert that he was the sole heir. In order to salve her conscience, she always added that Robert was anxious that no one should mention the subject to him.
Girls who had publicly announced that they wouldn't marry Robert Brown if he was the last man in the world hastily revised their views on the subject. But the legacy, though occasionally hinted at, was never actually mentioned to him. Mrs. Brown had been summoned to the sickbed of a sister, and Ethel had gone north on the prophesied visit, or they might, of course, have put an end to the misunderstanding. As it was, Robert remained the courted idol of the neighbourhood. But it didn't surprise him, for Robert had secretly purchased a book called How to Be Popular. He'd at once set to work to study the book in the seclusion of his bedroom. It told him that he possessed secret powers of magnetism and attraction that only needed to be liberated. It hinted that when the opposite sex should see him as he really was, dominating, irresistible, dynamic, it would fall for him in shoals. Robert didn't particularly want it to fall for him in shoals, but he did want Peggy Barlow to fall for him. The rule that came over and over again was, hold up your head and look the world in the face. And then you had to say to yourself, I can if I will, not I will if I can. And inexhaustible power surges within me. Robert conscientiously committed these slogans to memory and sallied forth the next morning. He was amazed by the instant success of the system. It happened to be the day that the news of his legacy had spread through the village. Everyone he spoke to, saying the little slogans to himself the while, gave him a new and respectful attention. Peggy Barlow herself came down to the gate to meet him, and, with a sweetness that made her almost unrecognisable, suggested a walk in the woods. During the walk, she discoursed upon her utter indifference to wealth and luxury, and told him at least 11 times that she always liked people for themselves alone. She repeated that money meant nothing to her, but nevertheless kept telling him how much she'd always longed for a diamond brooch, a real pearl necklace, and a high-powered motor car. The fact that at the end of the week he won £3 in a football pool seemed to him only a natural part of his triumphant career. To William, it was the fulfilment of the prophecy. £3 was to him untold wealth. Anyway, he was glad that it had come at last. He walked through the village wearing an air of importance. Robert's got that money I told you about, he told everyone. It came this morning.
The news spread like wildfire. Robert's legacy had arrived.
By evening, Robert had completely disposed of the £3. He'd bought a pair of tyres for his motorcycle, given a shilling to William, and spent the remaining 5 shillings on a present for Peggy. It was, he considered, an extremely handsome present, a large paste brooch in the shape of a motor car. The Mercers were giving a party that night, and he meant to present it to her then. He looked forward with pleasure to her gratitude. Strange to remember how aloof and disdainful she'd been only a short time ago.
His liberated, dynamic personality had made a completely different person of her. He and William set out together, Robert silent and aloof. "I can if I will, I can if I will," he murmured to himself as he went along. "Inexhaustible power surges within me." William, on his side, was feeling at peace with himself and all the world. There would be jellies, blancmanges, and trifles, and Robert had come into his money, so that episode was satisfactorily closed. Peggy Barlow was waiting for Robert just inside the dance room. Robert took her to an alcove and pressed the little packet into her hands.
"Just a small present," he explained.
Peggy opened it.
"Oh, Robert! Diamonds!"
Robert laughed. "Well, hardly diamonds exactly, but they do get them up awfully well nowadays, don't they?"
Peggy stared at him. "Do you mean they aren't real?"
Robert's mouth dropped open. "How on earth do you think I could buy real diamonds?"
"Well, you got your money this morning, didn't you?"
Yes, said Robert, but...
She interrupted him angrily. "And you bring me a cheap thing like this?"
"Hang it all, it costs 5 shillings. I don't call that cheap."
"5 shillings? 5 shillings? You got all that money this morning and you spent 5 shillings on me?"
"Well, it was a jolly sight more than I could afford, too," said Robert.
"You're going to be very careful of it, aren't you?" sneered Peggy.
"Well, I don't know what you call careful. I've spent it all anyway. It was £3.
Three?
Yes,
£3 from one of those football pools. But what about your legacy?"
Legacy? Well, what legacy?
"Well, the legacy from the old man in the fog."
The what?
"The old man in the fog, the one you found lost and showed the way to, and who left you his fortune."
Robert's face was a mask of bewilderment.
"I don't know what you're talking about. You must be thinking of someone else." Peggy stamped angrily. "Of course I'm not thinking of anyone else. You spread this story just to get me to take some notice of you, and then you had the nerve to stand there and tell me that it was all a deliberate lie."
Robert felt that he must be dreaming.
"Listen, I never told you about any old man in a fog."
"No," agreed Peggy contemptuously. "You were too much of a skunk even to do that. You got someone else to do your dirty work. You spread the story through an innocent child."
"Oh!"
And with that she turned on her heel and left him. He stared after her. She must have gone mad. Well, he didn't care. And he'd just show her, too. Clorinda Bellew, Dolly Clavis, and Cornelia Gerard had been pestering him for dances all the week. He approached Clorinda and asked her for a dance. But already the report was flying round the room. Robert Brown hasn't got any legacy after all. He'd only won £3 in a football pool, and what was more, already spent it. Clorinda looked at him disdainfully and said that her programme was full. Dazedly, he passed on to Dolly Clavis. Dolly Clavis didn't even bother to speak to him. Robert struggled to collect his forces. This was a crisis. He'd forgotten to say the little slogans since he entered the dance hall, and this was the result. He stood quite still and said them over to himself. Then, grimly controlled, he approached Honoria Mercer.
"Have you a dance for me, Honoria?"
"I can if I will, I can if I will. Inexhaustible power surges within me."
Honoria gave a nasty, sarcastic laugh and turned on her heel. Robert faced final failure. There was no getting away from the fact the slogans had failed. But surely there was more than that to it. What had Peggy said about an old man in a fog? What had she said about an innocent child? Innocent child. He looked round the room. William was nowhere to be seen, but Robert knew where he'd be. With firm and measured tread, he set off in the direction of the supper room. An inexhaustible power surged within him.